We're rolling now. Maddie. Matt Janella. Dude,
this is surreal.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I think since the beginning. I think I texted you the day after I did my first episode.
I know. It's been a, well, you know, because we both just sit around and just wait for things to happen. You know, it's of course it's going to take a long time.
It took a full year.
We're going a lot of places.
We were just talking about, you were saying that it's surreal to just be in the same place at the same time.
I can't, you know, Snowball was just in my house. Like I held Snowball. Every time I see Snowball on any form of your, you know, posts, videos, anything, he makes me smile. And today he was in my house with my baby boy. I mean, that's like connecting of some pretty cool dots.
It made me smile. I was thinking about it because, you know, I mean, I there's a couple different ways to look at it. Like some people, there's been a lot, I would say 9 out of 10 people see an image of Snowball on the golf course and they say, you can bring your dog to a golf course. And now you being a worldly golfer, right? You've been to the home of golf. You've been to other homes of golf around the planet. What do you say to that?
I told golf. I do see golf, you know, having to be accessible to the masses. I think that's, golf has to start there, and it did start there, and it's still there in a lot of pockets and places that where golf is officially a culture. So why wouldn't that be what we're trying to accomplish? Why wouldn't we want to have all golf look and feel a lot like the old course and the home of golf? Yeah. Why wouldn't we let people walk and dogs and talk, you know, it's black and white for me. It's clear that, you know, when you go to Goat Hill Park, when you go to places like that, there's bins out there for dogs so they get water. That means I'm home. I want to play that place. I want to go walk that place. I want to be around that place. I want to come back to that place. That's the way it should feel. That's the way it should look.
Most people are on this tip, right? Most people get it, I've found. It is interesting to me that, you know, and even outside of golf, like traveling with Snowball, it's a pain in the ass. Like, it's annoying. Like, he's, you know, he's cute in a photo and he's cute in a video when he's bopping around the golf course. But, like, he's also kind of, he can be, you know, I don't know if you've even seen it yet, but he almost bit Sergio Garcia. He growled at Sergio Garcia at the event the other day, and I was like, oh, my God. But, you know, so he has his little idiosyncrasies like humans. But the other day I posted a photo of us walking off the plane together and someone was like, are you really the guy that brings your dog on the plane? And I was like, well, do people bring children on the plane? Like, what is the problem?
Well, your answer to that is yes. Yeah, I am the guy that brings the dog.
Can I raise my hand any higher?
I'd rather have my dog than you.
Well, I guess what I'm just responding to is like, and you know, do you ever run into that where you're, I don't know if we need to talk about it, but I was going to say, you're a public figure in golf. You're standing for things that are new. Am I right?
Yeah. Or, you know, some things that are new, some things that are old. I don't look at it like that. My reactions are simply based on what I think is right or wrong, what makes sense and doesn't make sense. You know, I think, you know, so many times we just lose sight of what makes sense. You know,
be specific in golf. What are you saying?
Well, right now, the rules of golf. I just came back from Scottsdale with 40 people, a golf advisor getaway where people can kind of come have the experience that I have on the show.
Explain golf advisor getaway a little bit to someone who hasn't seen it.
Yeah, golf. So
this is a new show for you.
Yeah, Golf Advisor round trips are the 30-minute show that we're doing on Golf Channel now and going to these destinations, kind of an extension of what originally was Janella's Journeys, which were about 6 to 8 minutes.
Right.
Now they're 30-minute Golf Advisor round trips. At the end of the round trip, I say, if you want to experience a trip similar to what I've just had and see some of the courses and some of the off-course amenities that some of these places have, come on a Golf Advisor getaway. So 40 people showed up to Scottsdale. You know, I got to, you know, play with them. We played all the great golf courses of Scottsdale. But I also got to see them consume the game, which is very important to me. It's a wide range from 15 years old to 75 years old was on this trip. And couples, buddies trips within the trip. And all the conversation was about the rules, leaving the pin in or leaving the pin out, tapping the stuff down on the green, where we drop from the knee. Everything was being referenced. It's like this little little, you know, focus group on the game of golf. And, you know, it allows me to sort of watch and form, you know, passionate opinions. And for me, you know, leaving the pin in and for the amateur game and tapping everything down on the greens, it makes sense for the amateur game. Dropping from your knee so that you don't have to repeatedly drop, and all that makes sense. From a professional standpoint, what I'm seeing watching Kapalua or the Sony, you know, it doesn't look right. Guys putting with the pin in, deciding that strategically from 5 feet, that's the better way. You know, dropping from their knee and not being able to drop any higher than any, the pros play a different brand of golf.
Yeah.
The idea that we play the same game is ludicrous. If you've ever played in a pro-am or played with a pro and from 7,800 yards on green speeds that are 14 on the stimp with, you know, high roughs and galleries all along, that's, and they're playing for their livelihood and they count every shot.
Yeah.
When's the last time you went out and played rattle bottom golf, counted every shot? When it was OB, you took another one. And if you didn't go find your ball, you had to go back to the tee to re-tee. When's the last time?
Oh, man. I don't even know when the last time I played a full 18 was. No, I'm serious. No, because like I was going to play a full 18 2 weeks ago at Rustic Canyon, my favorite course in LA. I woke up and I was like, I think 9's good for me. I play a lot of golf.
We, you know, like, and that's basically going out and playing horse or playing 3-on-3 pickup half court. Like, you know, going to play softball, you know, corporate softball league. You know, we can play something that's similar to them and we can have variations of the rules. But at the end of the day, we don't play the same game that they play.
Right.
So let's drop it, bifurcate the rules, the ball. If we can come to an understanding and everybody agrees that this game that we play as amateurs is so much different than they play as pros, we pay to play, they get paid to play, you know, all that stuff.
True.
All of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a distinguishment between professional and amateur. Why are they the same rules?
Of course, it's absurd. It doesn't.
Is there any inside baseball that might happen or no?
Well, I would. You know, again, USGA had a problem with the anchoring of the putter, the optics. They said it doesn't look right. If they think the optics of what's happening in the game of golf right now looks right, as opposed to what that was that, you know, instigated a rule change on that end, what are we doing here? What is going on?
It's all very strange.
It's so strange, and it's kind of like we need a reset on a lot of stuff.
We played Winter Park this morning, a few holes.
Yeah.
We didn't even get a full 9 in. But it was funny because I, on the second hole, I almost brought up the fucking, sorry, I'm trying to curse less. it's fucking hard. We putted with the pin in, and I was like, I almost wanted to talk about it, and I was like, stop talking about it.
Everybody was talking. And what's funny is some guys will want the pin in. And then some guys want it out. So
it's now
defeated the whole purpose. Now the pin is going in and out and in for different player. I actually want it in. You know, the goal was to let amateurs walk up on the front end of a green and to a back pin and hit the pin putt and not worry about a two-stroke penalty if it hits the pin. You know, but
next it'll be no pin ever.
I don't know.
Every like, green is blind. I'm curious to know about the getaways.
Yeah.
So this is, it's a, you go into it, you're kind of doing like a coin cup, if you will, around America.
Yeah.
You're engaging with people who, essentially need your content. They are the same people that are going to watch Morning Drive and they're going to say, all right, I got one trip this year. Where are we going? Mm-hmm. Let's go to Matty G and let's figure it out. By that end, you solve an incredible puzzle for people because there really isn't, from what I can tell, a creative way of finding that information as a golfer.
Well, it's pretty simple. It's just, you know, the business model or the idea behind it was a lot of people say, I want to do what you do. I want to go where you go. And so we're basically saying, hey, go sign up and we're going to get you special access at Big Cedar Lodge. The group of people we had there got to play Ozarks National before it was really open.
Okay.
You know, and
are these also some privates too?
in some cases, I don't think we've got them on a private, but but we got them on courses that you can only usually play if you stay at the particular resort, like Byron Scott came with me to Denzante Denzante Bay and was like the co-host.
Place looks sick. That place looks sick.
You're gonna go, and you're gonna go back. They're doing it right there.
Can we talk Mexico for a second?
Yeah.
Like, how high does Mexico rank on your list of international destinations?
If you go to the right spot, if that's sort of what you're looking for, especially in Loreto, Denzante Bay, it's pretty affordable, actually. It's good value. They kind of let, ATV tours, you get to go have an ATV tour. They don't overcook like that, what you can and can't do. It's kind of like, can I do that? Yeah, go ahead.
They're like, are you okay with potentially dying?
Go ahead. Yeah, like if you want to jump off the rock, go jump off the rock. It's on you. Like, you know what I mean? In the U.S., we're like, no, get away from the rock. One person had an accident, nobody else can have fun. It's a little overreactionary. And I find it refreshing when you go to Mexico. It's a little more raw. It's kind of like the North Shore of Kauai. Like, it's not everything is, overdone, and it's authentic, amazing service, great food. The golf course is super user friendly, spectacular setting. Sea of Cortez, blue whales, not just humpbacks. Have you ever seen a blue whale?
I mean, not in recent memory.
No,
I need to get
out. Have you ever boated along the side of a submarine? That's basically seeing a blue whale. I mean, it is so massive. You're like, all right, I'm really little. That's really big. Let's go in.
And you got to bring Katie and the kiddo.
Katie and baby Bandon are kind of, that's my snowball. I bring, people are like, are you really the guy who brings your wife and kid everywhere you go? Yeah.
Yeah,
I am.
Yeah, that's part of the deal.
Right now they are. They are in they're riding shotgun, and it makes everything so much more special because you're sharing it with the people you love. And
is it hard? I actually never thought of this before, but I know when we're on work trips, right? Behind the cameras right now, if you're driving in the car, the person who kind of set up the mics here is Colt. He's on the bed. We're in a hotel room. If you're watching the video on YouTube, Colt's just sort of over there. We're like a tight ship, and it's funny because we played. We played golf with Ashley and Jeff over the summer, and Ashley was under the impression that a round with the boys wasn't that different to a round with her. And she said later, was it that different? And Jeff just looked at her and was like, I mean, very, very different. Incredibly. And I'm not going to say what Jeff said because it's pretty vulgar, but, it's okay when you're with the boys. I wonder what it would be for me as a crew, we're just always going. Is it tough ever to, have Katie and Bandon there? Are you like, is it a push and pull for you? Because I'm curious.
My crew has a very similar dynamic, by the way. I've been with the same producer for all 6 years of anything I've ever done travel wise, Alex Upegi. So he, and then Rex Lint is kind of what we call our director of photography, and he's super cool and creative and quirky, and then we have other guys who have joined the team. Palmer is our sound guy, and we got Mike Hagedor is another camera guy. And they're kind of new to this new version of the Golf Advisor Getaway, and it's very familial, and it's amazing because if Katie and Bandon are coming, those guys get excited because, first of all, it's kind of like.
All right, we're back, everybody. We cut on a weird moment because the memory card was full.
I get chatty.
And in that,
lot of cards. Trust me.
It wasn't you. We were, and in that moment, we were talking about what podcast number is this? It's around 100. But anyway.
It'd be really cool if it was number 100.
It would, I mean.
Can we just say that? Or
It's number 100, man.
Tell Janelle it's 100 and get him out of here.
Yeah. I got the approval from management. It's okay. We cut out on you talking about your crew. And just to finish that up. You said something that really hit me, which is that your crew would watch Bandon for you.
Well, no, it's just it's a family. Your son. Crew is another name for family, really. I mean, and I've already seen with you guys and know based on sort of what I watch and understand, and it's just inherent to sort of being in the trenches with people on this you know, the act of travel alone is such an adventure.
Yeah.
So to be on any form of travel adventure with any group of people, not unlike what happens on buddies trips or, you know, trips to like Scotland and Ireland, you get closer. And then do 20 trips in a year. So how close are you after 20 trips in a year? Either you're real close or they're gone. You know what I mean? Like, it's either it didn't work or something happened.
Yeah.
And in the case of what I have is a family, you know, and it extends beyond Katie and Bannon and Katie's kids. And, you know, all of it is just kind of one with who I am. It kind of comes with the territory. They don't come on every one of them. And there are certain times where it goes back to sort of us, just the crew. And that takes on a whole different, you know, not unlike a guy's trip does if you go on a couple's trip or if you go on a family trip. All of them have a different feel. And I feel lucky to be working with the people I work with. They're all super talented. They're great. We all pick each other up. We inspire each other. We push each other. If that's not happening, then you probably don't have good content anyway.
Right. Yeah. They definitely affect each other.
Yeah.
And it's, so let's go into, you said something interesting today talking about work. You said, if I didn't have my current job, which, I mean, you're a journalist, as far as most people in golf that are journalists, I've got a couple thoughts here, right? Yeah. One is you say you're a journalist, am I right?
I have a degree in journalism.
Okay.
I do feel like I practice a form of journalism. I don't know that Columbia University is, I'm not, you know, the pride of Columbia, you know, journalism school. I think, you know, they practice, you know, as pure as it gets.
Because they're doing hard hitting stories. They're unwrapping things that no one wants to tell.
I'm doing golf travel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not, you know, I do take
but
it
that's
seriously.
Still 100% necessary. If you weren't here, someone else would do it. I mean, not,
and a lot
that
of
sounds
other
like
people
I'm saying
are
irreplaceable,
doing it. No,
but what
no.
I mean is.
Well, we're all replaceable. And I take pride in my content from a journalistic perspective because I feel like what I'm doing is trying to help people tell their stories.
Right.
So Big Cedar Lodge is not my story. That's Johnny Morris's story. Ray Halbritter's story is Turning Stone in upstate New York. That's not my story. So what I want to do is go in, tap into Ray Halbritter, get him to tell his story and have other people tell what their experiences are like being a Turning Stone, working a Turning Stone. You know that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So at Johnny Morris at Big Cedar Lodge, I want to tap into the people that consume that place or are the heart and soul of that place and let people make a decision based on that. Did that story that I helped tell inspire those people to get up and go to their computer and say, I want to go to Big Cedar Lodge? It's not because of something I said or did. I'd like to think it's something because of what someone else on that show or in that segment said or did that made people believe. So I kind of remove myself from sort of the endorsement role and try to, and that's where Alex Upegi comes in. That's where my producer and I have been in step from the very beginning, which is we've got to layer in authenticity and real moments and real people into what we're trying to do. Otherwise, no one's going to react to it. That, you know, what we see and what we're watching and learning, it's pretty easy to tell nowadays what's authentic and what's not.
Right.
It's a word that's used a lot, and but it's not always easy to achieve authenticity. And I think the only way we do it is by the people we spend time with at these particular destinations. So in that sense, I feel like, yes, I am doing some sliver of journalism.
It's interesting because you started bringing up authenticity, and I was already going to ask you a question about the difference between a journalist and an influencer.
Yeah.
And I think in a way you got there a bit ahead of me, which is, I am curious about in your job, you basically, we have similar jobs, but they're pretty different.
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about this a bit in the car right over here. But, you know, you obviously have certain boundaries that you have to pay attention to. But at the same time, you know, you're not an influencer. And what is an influencer anyway in golf? Can you tell me you, and what's cool about, you know, what I look to you for and what I really respect you for is obviously your professionalism. You've taught me so much about my own job. And before I lose the question, I'll get into that story later when we first met. I love that story. But you've seen the growth of the influencer within your, like, you know, seat at the golf journalism table.
Yeah.
What do you, I mean, that's a long question.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's a question, but can you comment on that?
Well, first of all, I know you're doing a great job at what you do because you inspire and influence me. I don't know if that makes you an influencer. I don't know if that makes you a journalist. All I know is what you're doing is inspiring and influencing me. I get inspired by what it is that you do and how you do it. Now, I hope to try to accomplish that with somebody who's watching what it is that I do and how I do it. If I'm worried about whether or not I'm influencing or not, then I'm probably not going to be a good influencer. All I'm worried about is following my passions, my energies, asking the questions that I want to ask, going in with a blank slate and transporting that and you know, broadcasting that back out to the people who watch the Golf Channel or read, you know, a Golf Advisor. And in that sense, I've got this amazing platform. I've got this amazing partner in the Golf Channel. If you want to be immersed in the world of golf, what better place to do it than the Golf Channel, right? So I don't take that lightly. I see that I've got a great platform. I understand that I have a great job and an opportunity. And that's where I give 110% of all my effort and energy, is not to squander that or, you know, take that for granted. I want to, you know, I get anxious if I'm home. You know, some people say, oh, is it hard to travel? It's actually hard to be home for me. If I'm home for any longer than a week, and you can ask my wife, I get stir crazy. You know, I'm freaking out. I know that I'm only as good as my last trip, my last post, my last person I connect with, that's it. I've got to keep going. Yeah. Otherwise, what am I doing?
Do you, you described yourself today as having ADHD or ADD. I didn't know. Is that true? Or is that just sort of a...
Well, I've got a short attention span. Yeah. So in that's about 3 minutes, holes. I'm just going to get up and walk away. Yeah.
This is a short pot.
It's something I, you know, we were talking about golf and why I don't think I can ever get back, you know, or get down to like a true scratch golf. That would take so much commitment and so much attention and so much focus, so much, you know, I'm not capable of that.
Your golf game now sits at, you said an 8?
Yeah.
But you said something that's going to go, were you referring to your handicap being not, because I have the same problem where I'm a 7, but I'm going to go, if you really wanted me to, like, I love your rattle, what did you call it, rattle bottom?
Yeah, yeah.
What does that mean?
When you put the ball is rattling in the bottom of the cup at every hole.
Did you get that?
Rattle bottom.
I had to think about it, yeah.
I did get it.
I dig it.
Rattle bottom golf is like everything goes to the bottom of the hole.
Oh, I love that. I never played that game. Yeah. Sounds fun. No, I have. But I think if I really did do that tomorrow.
You rattled a few bottoms?
I rattled a few bottoms last night. Okay. No. Shit.
You've played rattle bottom.
Well, I have. But I was going to say 7 handicap, but I mean, I'm not going to go out tomorrow and shoot an 81 or a 79.
Yeah, I feel like I can shoot I'm capable of shooting 82 on any golf course in the world.
Yeah.
I can figure out ways to get to 82, and I have, and I generally do. If I'm south of 82, if I shoot 77, 78, that means things really, I made a few extra putts or, you know, I found a few extra fairways. And I'm also very capable of shooting 88, 92. I can figure. Yeah. And when that happens, it used to ruin my whole life. I used to want to just, you know, that would be, you know, trunk slamming, club breaking, you know, it ruined me.
I don't see you as a club breaker.
Well, back when I was, you know, young. I just had no perspective.
What age? What age are we talking?
You know, teenagers.
How old? What age did you break your last club?
I've kind of released clubs recently. You know, we're like in the follow through, you're like, and you just kind of release. That's my new move. It's just kind of like the follow through release.
Float,
you know,
it.
Yeah. Or just you kind of let it go on your backswing. It drops behind you. But I don't break clubs anymore. It hurts when I, the minute you break a club, you're like, oh my God, what did I just do?
It's, yeah. It's
and just, I hate that feeling.
It's a strange feeling.
I've distanced myself from that feeling.
Yeah. It's strange.
My point is now is that a bad round of golf does not wreck me. It, you know, it might take a beer to make it go away, or, you know, one buddy saying, dude, get over it. You know, now we got to go have dinner. You're right. I'm not, you know, there's too many other things that are so great in my life for me to ever get down over a 92, right? I mean, I just have to come look at a picture of my baby and I'm like, all right, I'm good. You know, he still loves me.
In your experience, does that typically come, is that a stage of golf evolution? Is that waiting for everybody?
Yeah, it's a maturation of, you know, golf being a microcosm of life in general. And then how you mature and appreciate the game of golf certainly evolves. I would think almost everybody I've ever spoken to has kind of a maturation of who they are and then how that relates to the game of golf and their relationship with the game of golf. You know, I used to always love to play with my uncle and my dad. Now all I want to do is someday play golf with my son. You know what I mean? That's it. Everything gets flipped upside down. And, you know, I really hope, you know, you have a kid someday. Cause you know, I got to a point where I thought, oh, I'm never going to have kids. I've sort of stayed too hyper-focused on my career and my job, and the sacrifices I've made are end up going to be that I'm not married with kids. And then all of a sudden now I'm married and I have four kids because I have one with my wife and she has three from a previous marriage. And now I'm like, wow, that happened fast.
Yeah. Yeah. You,
and it's amazing. It's amazing.
You started on the 13th hole.
It's amazing. Well, no, I'd like to think that, everybody else started on the first hole and they got to the 13th hole. I was just the single that was playing through all the other groups to catch up to the group that got to the 13th.
Yeah, yeah. You were just
like, play through. Can I go through? Got to get a group ahead.
Right. I'm looking for Katie. I don't know what she looks like, but she's my future wife. You were single till 44. That was inspiring for me to hear.
Yeah.
I needed to hear that today.
I'm so glad I waited for as long as I did, but I can't believe I waited as long as I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is a number for everybody in which, you know, I really needed to do what I did. You know, I started as a photo editor. I then was a director of photography. Then I was a writer for Golf Digest. And now I'm like a broadcaster of some form, shape or form. I'm on my third career. I don't know that I ever get to a third career unless I have a real hyper focus on my own career path and the opportunities that are presented themselves to me. When Jerry Tardy sat me down at Golf Digest and called me in on a Friday evening and said, we're gonna have you go from a director of photography to our travel writer, that only happens because I went back and got a, you know, master's in journalism. That only happens because I'm single and available to kind of go out and explore the world. If I was married with two kids at that point, that was not gonna be a good job fit.
Whoa.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so by staying, you know, having a shallow root system, it allowed me the opportunity to say, yeah, I can take some risks that I otherwise wouldn't be able to take.
Right.
And opportunities came up that otherwise wouldn't have come up. I can be, you know, that selfish, self-centered approach to life that I was having didn't feel like self-reception. It just felt like it was my life.
Yeah.
And I'm doing what I do. And now I'm sharing all of that with, you know, loved ones.
Yeah, it makes me put it into perspective. Like, if I was married, I probably wouldn't be planning adventures in golf Afghanistan. Probably
or,
might not.
Or if you're married, you found someone who's going to go on those adventures with you. And, you know, yeah. I always say as a person, a sail or an anchor, are they helping you get to where you want to go or are they holding you back?
Whoa.
What you can't ever do is marry an anchor. If you married an anchor, and yeah. You need someone who helps you, you know, sail along, that's not going to work.
That's a really nice way to think. I like that.
Yeah. I always say people are sails or anchors or people are givers or takers. In the game of golf, you're either a giver or a taker. And I can count on two hands takers, people who are in the game of golf for the wrong reasons. They don't appreciate what it does or how it gets. And if you're a giver, you know, and you give to the game of golf, you're going to get it back tenfold. You're going to meet 10, if you, you know, you're going to meet 10 great people. You're going to go to 10 great places. You're going to play 10 great, whatever it is that you give to the game of golf, it's coming back tenfold. Unless you're a taker, and then the game of golf will get even with you.
Have you ever Do you have any experience with transitioning a taker into a giver? Is that possible, do you think?
I mean, for sure. I'm not saying that I'm there to sort of monitor and, you know, shepherd the actual transition. I'd like to think
you have a voice, man.
I'd like to think, well, and that all goes back to the inspiring and influencing and stuff, you know, like I'd like to think that what we're trying to do is convert people who might either not be interested in the game of golf at all, or might be, you know, sort of looking at the game of golf for all the wrong reasons, and we can help get them to where they need to go in that maturation process of the game of golf. And, you know, guys like John Ashworth, we talked about him earlier, founder of not only Ashworth, but now of Link Soul, and the whole concept of linking souls. And, well, there's a guy who walks the walk.
Yeah.
He, you know, that I've never, ever met anybody more, you know, convicted and focused on simply leading by example. Okay, that he's influencing me. He's helped me transition and mature within the game of golf and life by simply showing me how to treat people and consume the game and how you travel and how you conduct yourself when you're on the road and what you're representing, who you're, you know, in, and, you know, developing a better sense of self and worth. And that, you know, if you surround yourself with a few of those kind of people, you're bound to get there regardless.
He's quite a ways ahead.
He was out of birth.
He's the Michael Phelps of the future of golf.
Kind of at birth, he was. Ahead. He was. You know, he's. We always used to have a saying at Sports Illustrated. You know, the two coolest people at Sports Illustrated when I was there in the mid '90s were Walter Yost. Christian Yost's dad, and Bjorn Yost's dad. He's a legend, right? Walter Yost, you know. He does books with Michael Jordan and Ken Griffey Jr. You know, he does whatever he wants. And there's Rick Riley, the writer, mid-90s. You know, had the back page, was, you know. And I always just say, oh, who's cooler, you know, when I first started? Rick Riley or Walter Yost? And Phil Jackie, I'll never forget, said it best. He said, let me put it to you this way. Walter Yost was born cool. Rick Riley, he got cool like 2 weeks ago. Do you know what I mean? Like new cool versus old cool. John Ashworth has always been cool. He's old cool. You know right. what I mean? Old money, new money. Yeah. Old cool, new cool.
Yeah, it's like baked into his
it's just
blood.
It's just who they are.
Yeah, well, and I think part of that is that, you know, the things, well, I don't know Walter personally, but I mean, I know from John, from knowing John, you know, well enough, It's like the things he believes in are they're actually impossible to disagree with.
And but he doesn't just believe in them, you know. He saw that Goat Hill Park was going to go down, and he was like, "I got to do something," you know. And he's in the middle of trying to figure out his whole life and business of Link Soul. It's probably the last thing he needed on his plate was to try to help save a mini municipal in his, you know, in his backyard.
He's got a couple things going on.
Yeah, he had a lot of pressures and a lot of stresses and a lot of things. And yet he's out there, you know, digging bunker. I mean, he's in the cart. He's raking stuff. He's, you know, he's rallying the locals in the town and, you know, and finding, you know, the incentives that California was saying, hey, if you want a turf removal, we'll give you money for the acre. He slid in, got that, submitted that thing, got money from the state and made the conversion from potable water to reclaimed water, making it a viable business model. Like, this is real stuff.
Yeah.
And he did it because it was the right thing to do, not because he wanted press or attention. He wanted it because he wanted a place for people to come with their dogs or their kids and be okay. He grew up there. He's giving back. He's paying it forward.
Giver.
Yeah, he's a giver. Oh, he's the cap. He's defines it. He's it.
Let's I want to take a quick break, and then we can go and talk about Winter Park and just some other fun stuff. So everybody stand by. All right, everybody, time to hear from maybe what's soon to become your best friend, Blue Chew. Okay, here's the deal. Do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? I'm not talking about going to the bathroom. I'm talking about increasing your performance and getting that extra confidence. You guessed it, on the driving range. Nope, I mean in bed. Seriously, listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. not the color that your balls were before you got this wonderful. Okay, moving on. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know it's the real deal. I've tried it, and I'm afraid to say I couldn't leave the house for beep, and it's the stuff that works, exclamation point. You can take them anytime, day or night. You can even eat them in a sandwich. I'm just kidding. I haven't actually looked into that, but the point is, even on a full stomach, because they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. For example, after getting your sandwich at Chick-fil-A and you realize that maybe you were hungry for something else. That's the phone ringing, folks, but it's not Blue Chew calling me to tell me that this ad is unairable. It's someone else calling me to find out if I really use Blue Chew. Anyway, hang on, because here's the deal. This isn't just for guys with dysfunction. It's for any guy who wants extra function and to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Now, here is actually an interesting subject, because do I realize that you can always be better at something that you're not the best? Tiger Woods, for example. All right, I'm going to leave that there. I'm not going to go any further. Anyway, Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. That means that it doesn't say Blue Chew all over it. I'm going to get laid in 4 minutes. So there's no in-person doctor's visit and no waiting at the pharmacy. And best of all, no more awkwardness unless you eat a lot of Blue Chew before the date. Okay, moving on. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. So right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. That means you listening right now. Pull over the lawnmower, get out your pen and paper. You're going to go to BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. Free? Wait, hang on. Free? You're going to get your first... Jeez, I'm going to text this to everybody except... Mom and Dad, please skip past this. This is embarrassing. Anyway, you're going to get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code ERIK, E-R-I-K. Don't spell my name wrong this time, folks. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's Blue, B-L-U-E, Chew, C-H-E-W.com. Promo code ERIK, E-R-I-K, to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, folks. You know my favorite golf shoe, don't you? I think you do. It's Three Stripe Life, y'all, and that means Adidas. And so anyway, I just wanted to tell you that when I'm a big fan of the Tour 360, obviously, and they've made a huge update to the Tour 360, and the two letters that it's concerned with are the letters X and T, okay? The Tour 360 XT changes the game, okay? It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round. By the way, a light golf shoe is what I'm all about. A heavy, there are some other companies making heavy golf shoes, and I'm just like, by the way, I weigh enough. There's enough going on. I'm carrying a golf bag. I'm carrying my team. Tour XT changes the game. It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round, and it still features that Boost, y'all. Do you know where Boost comes from? And Boost is cool because it only comes in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that. And actually, the guy who made Boost like was going to bring it to some other, you know, they were shopping it around, and everyone else said no. Adidas was like, I'll take that Boost, even though it's only black and white. And what did Adidas do with it? They made it awesome. I'm looking at Boost right now on my feet. Boost on my feet. And it has an X-shaped traction system that gives you insane stability. Literally, it's not sane. It's literally crazy. Your feet will literally be like, I'm crazy. Best part, it comes in spikeless. Ooh, that's tight. The first spikeless ever in the history of the Tour 360. Crazy comfortable and perfect for the course. Get your pair at adidas.com. Thank me later. Follow Adidas Golf for all the latest and greatest. That's all true statements right there. Check it out. Go support Adidas because they're a good company, good people. I like it. All right, we're back, everybody. Thank you for listening to those incredibly entertaining advertisements. So, really briefly, you know, I talked about it on my Instagram when you and I first met 15 months ago or so.
Yeah.
And I go back to it a lot because here we were at, well, we were just talking before the break about John Ashworth and Goat Hill. And, you know, John was like, oh, you know, come and, you know, he was obviously you were going to host the Wishbone Brawl, this barefoot persimmon event, Charlie Hoffman and Xander Schauffele, whatever. And he's like, yeah. And then he hit me up and he's like, you and Maddie can do it together. I don't know what side of the story you heard, but I was like, okay. Like, I don't know how, I was so confused. And what was really interesting was, is I didn't host it with you. I stood on the sideline and learned a lot. And I know you're going to grin or whatever, but like, really, no, it was terrifying, first of all. And you just literally grabbed the mic and walked up and you had cards, which I was like, oh, that's what you need to do. You need to remember things. You need to, I would never.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because like, I remember even when we were on the driving range, you're like, all right, here, take the mic and you say this. And I was like, Matt, come on, just you do it. I cannot do this. And it was just, it wasn't that I wasn't interested in sharing. It was that I did not know how to do it. And you just like, it was really cool to see you take something that, you know, I've learned my side of it, right? You know, we walked up this morning and you're like, you're flying the drone? And so it's different in that way. Like that's my thing. It's like, yeah. I'm like, I love flying the drone or whatever, but learning how you sort of handle, you know, the job of hosting I learned a lot.
Yeah.
Can you tell me I can tell you what I learned, but can you tell me what do you learn from the job of hosting?
Well, I learn every day. I'm still learning every day. And, you know, what we did at Wishbone Brawl is different than what I might do on Morning Drive, which is different than what I might do on a Golf Advisor round trip, which is different than what I might do at a Golf Advisor getaway. Like each thing is so different and so unique and has its own sort of set of, skill set to do any of all that. Most of the time, and I'm sure you feel the same way, I'm kind of just winging it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be prepared, you know, so before any interview, just like I'm sure you read up and you try to get a better sense of the line of questioning or things that you're curious about. If you're curious about it, you'd like to think maybe someone else is curious about it. What is so great when people say, oh, you have the greatest job in the world. The reason why I have the greatest job in the world is not always because I get to go and travel and play golf for a living, but it's because of the people I get to meet, the stimulation I have every day, because a lot of times I find myself in uncomfortable situations. And that to me is what living's about, right? That's my drug, is that feeling of like, oh, wow, I'm a little bit out over the tips of my skis. That's where I want to be.
What is an uncomfortable situation for Manchinella?
Well, you know, going live at, you know, on any given moment.
Okay, good.
And here we're on, you know, we're live, you know, we're live. When the red light goes on, you've got to form a sentence and sort of make sense. And, you know, I don't always do it. You know, there's a lot of times where I'm like, that was not good. You know,
I've only done one live thing. It was the 16th at Scottsdale and it was terrifying. But at the same time, there's like a little person inside of you that shows up and it's like, all right, yeah. Eric, let's go.
Well, no, and I always say to myself right before, because I was live 16th on the green of TPC Scottsdale. I'd been doing TV for about a year and a half. I did a kind of an essay on island greens, and afterwards, Rich Lerner sends it down, you know, to me to kind of recap, you know, kind of end it, and I'm going to throw it back up to the booth, and I'm standing there all by myself, you know, and I was nervous. My heart is thumping out of my chest, and you know the camera guy's looking at me like it's go time, but it's, you know,
and they are not with you.
They're not with you. You're detached. You're standing alone. I'm literally alone on an island, green
island.
And you know, at that point, I could either, you know, I could run and just say this isn't for me, or I could you kind of have an internal pep talk, which is smile. If you're not having fun, you need to find a new job. If you're not having fun with this pressure, if you're not embracing all that's going on around you, then go do something else. And I was literally telling that to myself. Like, if this doesn't work for you, then what are you doing here? Then go away.
Yeah.
And you know, you can kind of flip it just like you can with a 4-foot putt or a tee shot that matters. You know, at some point you've got to embrace it. Otherwise it's going to get the best of you.
And so you got the earpiece, the thing coming down. You've got the belt with the one nuclear button where it's like when you press this, everyone can hear you.
Oh yeah, you know, it's go time. You know, it's an amazing thing. And you know, I think of little things like it's great connective tissue to myself and my parents who are 85 and 80 years old who get to turn me on in the morning and get to watch. And they say, oh, you know, that's a very powerful medium. That I can be wherever I am and my parents get to turn me on TV and feel connected to who I am and what I'm doing. Because I'm 3,000 miles away and sometimes I'm more than that. And I can get a text from my mom and say, you know, it wasn't your best day today, but you know that she's my toughest critic. You know, I love that. That's connection, right. You know, and, or she'll say, man, I'm so proud of you. You did great. You know, it's like little things like that. You know, you're like, wow, you know, I'm 47 years old and my mom sends me a text, you know, she's either critiquing me or saying, yeah, good job.
Well, speaking of that, Matt, I'd like to introduce my parents, David and Susan. They're listening or maybe even watching on YouTube.
I hope they're proud of me.
They are proud of you and they feel connected to you because you did a story on Great Waters. Okay. On Reynolds Plantation, where they live.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, they're in a good spot.
They're in a good spot. Yeah. And again, it's going to be a nicer spot when the renovations are done.
Oh, my God.
And they said, Matt was just here.
Oh, that's cool.
Because they know we're friends. And
that's really cool.
Yeah.
New ownership there has got everything turned around. That place is, you know, unhooked now. It's good.
Yeah, it should. I mean, there was, you know, it was, you know, it's an interesting example, right? Yeah. We've got Great Waters, and if you're not familiar, Great Waters is five. It's one of five courses. Jack Nicklaus. I'm gonna try Bob Cupp, Tom Fazio, Reese Jones.
Yeah,
Reese, and then one other.
A weird one. Arthur Hills. Yeah, does he have one there?
I don't know.
I think there's actually six now.
There's six.
There might be. Nicklaus, Reese, Fazio, Bob Cupp.
Yeah, I think we're not going to get it. In any event, it's the kind of place that when I was a whippersnapper in golf, I would hate on. And yeah. I would be like, why do you do this? Like, yeah. this is terrible.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, this place is awesome. Like, give me a good green. Give me, like, just give me it. You know, it's kind of like Augusta. You can stay at the Ritz and you can play there. Whatever. A lot of houses. It's on a lake. It's amazing. There's fireflies. I go there and I see my family, my mom and my dad. It was built at this time, and you talked about the business model of it. Now they're in a good place. It was built around this, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of this, and you have a perspective on it. It was built around this time when all you needed to do was like sprinkle a lot into the middle of nowhere, and it could be like quarter acre. Sprinkle 500 of those, and build three 18-hole courses, and all of a sudden you made $1 billion. And then they started basically selling the courses. The management got screwy. The courses went into disrepair. And then everything got screwed. How does golf tie into this awful story? And, you know, you must have a really good handle on this story, right?
Yeah, well, you know, if you're going to use golf to sell real estate, you better build really good golf and, you know, you better start there. If you're going to build generic golf or bad golf or uninteresting golf or unadventurous golf or golf that's, you know, constricted by, you know, the corridors, it's a tangled web we weave. And not everything ends up, you know, bright and shiny. There's a lot of people who have bought houses that are overlooking golf courses that are grown over. They're not being kept. And what's that do to your property value? So got to be careful.
Ooh, that would suck.
Oh, yeah. And it's...
That's terrifying.
Yeah. And then now try to resell it.
Well, actually, Pinehurst number 4.
Yeah.
There was a par 3 that's not there anymore.
I know.
And the guys who owned that house were like, can we at least mow it?
Hello.
Because now we're looking at overgrown grass.
Get a little help. Yeah, I know. It's not always perfect. And I've seen it a lot, for sure. And a lot of times what ends up happening is the ownership goes on. Look at Sea Island, you know, Bill Jones, basically put way too much, started a business model. It wasn't going to make ends meet and he lost it.
Really?
But then someone comes in and gets it for a lot less money. They're able to adjust the business model or put money into it that makes more sense, add more room. You know, in the whole business model of what became Sea Island at the back end of Bill Jones's nearly $1 billion investment, if you really ran the numbers, he didn't have enough beds to actually ever make a profit. So even if the place was packed full, they were going to lose money because he was going to try to make it on the real estate end. And when the real estate dried up and no one's buying lots, he gone.
He gone.
And then, you know... Mr. Anschutz goes in eventually with a couple partners, and there was a great story about the bidding of two guys versus two guys, and they walked out of the room and goes, why do we bid against each other? Let's just settle it like $125 million. We'll get Sea Island for $125 million, put more money into it, and make it sing. And then Anschutz eventually goes out and buys out all the partners. And now it's, you know, it's successful again. Yeah. And not unlike unlike what MetLife essentially did at Reynolds, which is guy got out, you know, trying to do too many Reynolds all over the country. And it didn't work.
It wasn't a pyramid scheme.
No, no. But
it was weird.
Yeah, but
I mean, this was like thousands of acres. It was like dozens of miles of property.
Yeah. Point is new ownership gets it for good value, ends up being able to make the adjustments. They built that great little pub at the top of the hill overlooking the National Golf Course.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
The amazing pub with cottages all in the great, you know. That's the kind of stuff that Reynolds needed. You know, right. I keep banging them on a short course. They need a short course because look at their clientele. Families, kids, couples, not people who want to go out and play 18 holes every day.
They don't have time. They're there with their kids and their family.
So go play a short course. You know, all these places, you know, what Pinehurst did at the Cradle is, you know, that feeds their clientele, you know, and recreating, reinventing the front doorstep of Pinehurst with a short course where everybody's out there in eightsomes and having fun and music and drinking and, the front doorstep of Pinehurst used to be, you know, lawn bowling. I'm here at the Cradle of American Golf and I drive up and the first thing I see is lawn bowling. Now you kind of look right past the lawn bowling and all you see is people playing golf. Yeah. What a concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Credit to Tom Patchy for making that move.
He's done a great job there. Yeah. We had such a good time there.
Pinehurst is now set up. You know, Bob Dedman and Tom Patchy and Don Padgett before him. I mean, they have now shepherded. We're talking about sort of shepherding the game into the next 100 years. That's what just happened at Pinehurst.
Yeah, absolutely. We go to Great Waters, you know, every 4th of July. They have this great 4th of July party. And you're right. What would be a great foreground or a great sitting area would be a short course.
Short course.
Right there on the water.
So they have bold. They have six courses and they have a design for a seventh course, which would be Pete Dye. And you know, this goes back a couple of years and they sat me down and said, "What do you think we're gonna put a Pete Dye?" I'm like, "What?
It's insane.
The last thing you possibly need is another big, you know, unforgiving
$40 million course.
Golf course. Build a short course. It's going to satisfy all your needs."
Yeah, but see, what they want the Pete Dye course because they want to sell another 500 homes. I could say that. The question you get most is, you guys get a lot of questions. Where do we go next? That's the question, yeah.
I've been here, here, and here. Where do we go next? Like that's been my life for the last 12 years.
Is it exhausting? Do you just hate the question?
No.
Can you just post one answer for everybody?
No. No, I love the question.
I believe you, but it's also unbelievable.
Well, but here's why I love it and why I take it so seriously, because I know how special a good buddies trip is. I know what that means to me.
You're actually the master of buddies. You go on many buddies trips a year outside of your job.
Oh yeah.
Like Ireland and Streamsong is the two that I know of.
Yeah, Bandon.
And Bandon.
Last year we did Pioneer. Uncle Tony Invitational. I call them my majors.
And you're not there with the crew. You're just Maddie.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just one of a foursome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, believe me.
I envy that.
I take more shit on those trips than anybody combined. You know? because that's the way I love. That's the way it should be. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I plan some of them. I fold into the planning and certain others. I love all those, right? And
yeah.
I take those. I know what those mean to me. Therefore, if you were to come to me and say, "Look, Matt, my three buddies and I, we have these 4 days. These are ironclad days. I've got these in the prenup. Then before I know these are my 4 days.
Oh, we go.
And they're budget proof because these guys, even if they have to tuck money into their mattress, this trip is not going away. It's a matter of just where they go. And the budget generally grows over time. You know, they go from Myrtle Beach to Pebble Beach eventually. You know?
Well, and most golf trips are about the same price. I mean, give or take 10 or 15%, right? Or are you talking like there is a wild, do you see a wild difference in like the budget and the extraordinary?
Oh, yeah.
Because I look at places like this past year for me, it's been Pioneer Streamsong. Whatever. Like, you know, Bandon.
Those are all the same.
Those are all the same. And what would you call those? Middle?
No, that's high end.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I apologize. I'm out of touch.
You know, that's Streamsong peak season, that's high end.
How much is it?
It could be, you know, you could be spending golf, lodging, food. You could be spending $600, $700 a day.
That's a lot.
Caddies, golf, lodging, food, drinks. That's, yeah, you know, so over a course of 4 days, 5 days, that's, you know, that's $3,000. That's $3,000. Now add getting there and back, the rental car, all the side action you might have. It could be a $3,500 trip. Right. That's a lot of money to spend for 4 or 5 days, you know. And if you go overseas, now you're talking about 35 to, you know, to 6,000, you know, somewhere in that ballpark, if you really want to make it the trip you want to have.
But does Mexico solve this problem at all? Do you get more free money down there?
Well, there's a ton of places that solve the problem. Turning Stone solves the problem. Okay. Myrtle Beach solves the problem. Different parts of Myrtle Beach. Sandestin, Florida. You know, if you don't go to Streamsong, go to Sandestin. Yeah. That solves the problem. How about Robert Trent Jones Trail in Alabama? Solves the problem.
That's my jam, solves dude. The problem.
$60 a round of golf. You know, that's you know, there's plenty of places. Or these places in the off season. Go to Scottsdale in the summer. Endure the heat. Bottom falls out of the price.
Lose some weight.
Go to Streamsong in the summer. Kill a lot of birds with one stone.
Free sauna.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All day long.
So you don't mind the question, because you see a value in the people you're connecting with and essentially the trust they're giving you.
My currency is people saying, "You told me to go here. I went, and it was awesome." And you know, a lot of times those alpha planners, the people that are planning the trips, are the ones that reach out.
Oh, like the one for 40.
The one for 40 or four.
Right.
The pressure's on that guy. He's the trip planner.
He's like, I want to
make sure he looks good. If he or she looks good, then we all win.
Right.
Right. Like then the whole trip is good, and the alpha planner looks good. And now they're coming back to me saying, okay, now where do we go now? Okay, made me look really good. Now what? And if I can make all those look good, then that's where the exponentially, like, you know, one times whatever number they went on, the guy, you know, either can say it or just know it. Wow, Matt Janella helped me find it. You know, if I I've had a lot of that over the years, which makes me feel like I want to keep doing that. If people can keep telling me that, then I'll keep doing what I'm doing. And it's not, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you love Bandon. Not for everybody. If you don't want to play a lot of golf, and if you're into nightlife and you want to go to strip clubs or do whatever it is that you know, you want to do, that's not Bandon.
No.
Go somewhere else.
No, you're not doing that there.
No.
You're like a DJ for golf courses. You're like, I got the right course for you, everybody. Oh, get ready.
That's a great way of, you know, I've never heard that. But yeah, that, you know, I've been in parties with great DJs. And when a great DJ has control of the room.
Yeah.
And getting people, you know, Will I Am, I'll never forget it. Waste Manager at Phoenix Open.
Oh, yeah.
He had 10,000 people taking a rest.
Yeah.
Dancing uncontrollably, back down. I was no longer in control of who I am. That's a good DJ.
Well, yeah, you're what you're talking about is you're sensing a vibe, and you're basically saying, look, if this, then this.
Yeah.
If
how these many two, people? What's your budget?
Yeah.
What's your focus? Golf or nightlife? You know, or a mixture of both. Like, that's going to shape everything.
It's a very caring place in the world, right? You're also kind of like a priest.
Well, personalization. Who doesn't want to have something that kind of personalizes, you know, what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. It's really cool. And then at the same, going with the DJ analogy a little further, if you don't mind,
do it.
You're now coming out, like, so DJs, you know, you remix other people's music and people will be like, oh, you're not a musician because you haven't made.
I've never heard that version before. Like, oh, that was cool. You know, like.
And now you're like, well, I'm actually coming out with a new thing that I made, which is Winter Park, right? It's 9 holes and I basically revived this. Can we go, before we get into, I want to talk about, you know, the answer to the question that I asked, which is where do I go?
Yeah.
Because I get that a few times and I think it'd be interesting to hear what you say. And I think I know what your answer is. But before we do that, let's quickly just do Winter Park as you're now as a DJ making a song. What is Winter Park in a nutshell for people who don't know?
Well, Winter Park, it used to be Winter Park Country Club. Now it's Winter Park Golf Club. It's basically called Winter Park 9, WP9. Over 100 years old. It's had a kind of a various forms of life. You know, it used to be 18 holes. It used to be in a different part of town. But long and short of it is, it's over 100 years old. It's now 9 holes. It occupies some of the prime real estate running through one of the greatest little cities in not only Florida, but I think in America. Winter Park is a really special place, named Winter Park because people used to get on the train from the northeast of New York or Boston, get on the plane, come come down on a Friday evening after work, sleep on the train Friday night, wake up Saturday morning, and this was their winter park. Lakes, sun, fun, and they'd get back on the train, ended at Winter Park, and then they'd get back on the train on Sunday night. They'd sleep on Sunday night, and they'd wake up Monday morning, and they'd go to work in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, whatever. And so that's how it's got its name. And so people have been winter parking here for, you know, a long, long time. And I found the golf course when I first moved down here in 2013. I couldn't believe, I was like, this is so cool. For less than $20, you can be done in an hour and a half. I can walk to it. At less than $20, you overlook a lot of conditioning issues. It doesn't matter, yeah, right?
Like, exactly.
You know, if people have conditioning issues, just drop the price. That's why I hate places that punch their greens or, sorry, we got construction going on, but then charge you the full rate. No, yeah. At a movie theater, if they only showed us half the movie, would they charge us the full rate? Sorry, you're only going to see right up to the end. What? How does that make sense? Again, what makes sense?
Right.
Winter Park 9 has always made sense to me. And I got pulled into an impromptu lunch meeting a couple of years ago. And Matthew Haggerty is a producer at the Golf Channel, who's very tied into sort of all the, and lives in Winter Park. Was being talked to by a group of locals who said, you must know some people in the world of golf. Maybe you can help us try to fix this golf course. Let's have it overachieve instead of underachieve. This is prime real estate. It's fallen on disrepair. We need to invest in it. The mayor, Steve Leary, got behind it, said, hey, if you guys are this passionate about it, show me a proposal, give me a budget. Let's see what this costs, who would do it, how is it going to be done? And at lunch, you know, I was said, who they asked me, you know, who would you have do this job if you were to be a part of this project? And I had just come back from Cabot Cliffs. I had spent time with Bill and Ben and their crew. A guy on their crew is Keith Reb.
Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw for the
Sorry. And and I had spent time with Keith Reb walking the property that day. Just, he was kind of like a little mini Bill. I mean, he's super, spiritual, and he, you know, you can tell, he's one with the land that he's working with, and obviously he's talented if he's working with these guys, and he's been part of Stream Song and Cabot Cliffs now and many others, and he lives in Orlando. Mm. He and his wife are living in Orlando, and I said, Keith Reb would be that's the kind of guy for this $1.2 million budget and this golf course, and you need someone who would really like actually invest and put their heart and soul into this project. And one thing led to another. I end up, Keith is like, I really need to get clearance from Bill on this, because they had a lot of projects going. I went back to Cabot, met with Bill. Bill said I could make him available if the timing was right. What is the timing? Oh, they're still working on that. Not even a done deal. They're going to have to pitch. He's going to have to pitch the city and make a proposal and all that stuff. And Keith said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it with Riley Johns. They had been working together at Cabot and obviously had good chemistry and sort of, good for Keith for acknowledging the fact that bringing him in would be the right thing to do. Next thing I know, these two guys are carving and shaping and taking a totally flat piece of land and creating humps and bumps and contours and berms and, lion's mouth greens and, putting bunkers where they make sense again and put in a whole new irrigation system in it. So they put $1.2 million into a place that was losing $250,000 a year. Mayor Whoa. Just wanted to get back to breaking even. Now they're making money. They got night golf. They got events like happening at the week of the merchandise show, Seamus Golf going out there, bringing all these. Everybody has been through to play Winter Park 9. And if you haven't, you should.
Yeah.
I think it's the greatest golf experience. I think it's the greatest hour and a half you'll spend in golf. I'd put it up against, a lot of places in the country.
It's so interesting to hear that now it's quite the talk of the town. Many towns talk of the, it's big on the golf map already, but it's nine holes.
That has everything to do with Keith and Riley and Blake Conant, who they brought in, and the team that they worked with on the irrigation. It was about six guys total. And the whole city came out and helped sprig the golf course with the new grass. And I mean, there's just absolutely nothing about this story that isn't just everything you'd you want in the world of golf. The rallying, the community, the fishbowl they worked in, the whole city watching what was happening. You know, they were stripping down this golf course, the one that they had been working at. You know, it was kind of like what Bill Corr heard when he was redoing Pinehurst number 2. You know, a guy walked up to him in a parking lot and said, "Bill, I don't know what the hell you're doing here, but you should know as this course goes, so too does this town. So don't fuck it up."
Whoa.
And walked away. And Bill was like, you know, is that the ghost of Donald Ross? I mean, and, you know, and that's what Keith and Riley were hearing, you know, every day in Winter Park, like, hey, this course goes as this town goes. So don't mess this up. And they did a great job. They, they have a very deft touch, you know, an architecture that goes a long way. And I think that's why Bill and Ben are so successful, is because they don't slam in your face everything they ever have learned about the world of architecture. They just let it come to you.
It's very polite. And if you're going to be
thoughtful,
it's thoughtful. Yeah. Thoughtful. If you're going to be in Orlando and you want to check out Winter Park, there's a time to do it. And if you follow Maginelle on Instagram, which you'll see the link is down here, but you gotta go on Friday.
Friday afternoon skins game. My goal is to have it every Friday all year in 2019. Even when I'm not in town, I got guys who are helping run it. And, you know, skins game basically runs itself anyway. But $20 buy-in, high handicap. There's no handicaps. So we eliminate all the sandbaggers. So 3 par 3s, 2 par 5s. Both of them are basically reachable if you hit good drives.
Yeah.
And drivable par 4s. The short course is a great equalizer. Highest handicapper in the field is one. You know, scooped all the skins in two situations
really?
Already. Yeah,
with an even playing field. That's great.
Yeah, it's just I said before, it's magic.
I can't wait to come back for that. That's something we really like to do when we travel, is set up meetups. Really, they're kind of a bit more random in the sense that we don't really know when and where. But and
I love that, and I hope to do more of that down the road. I hope to have Friday Skins game wherever I am while it's happening, because of you. Again, that inspiration, like these meetups, these throwing yourself out there and saying, "Hey guys, this is where I am. Do you want to come?" My fear was that I'd do a meetup and like no one would show up.
It's a real fear. It will never happen. Someone will show up. I guarantee it.
I might have to pay him.
I can show up if you really need me. No, I mean, it's a real fear, but it doesn't happen. If people come, dude.
I'll be like, "Eric, I need a rescue."
Dude, we were in Sanibel. You know Sanibel, the little island down here? Yeah. And I was actually driving down the road, and I was like, "I wonder if I have any friends on the island right now." And then sure enough, we had this, we did a meetup the next day. 6 people came. And I was like, "Wow, dude."
So cool.
And we just all played together, and just played 9 holes. It was great. Yeah. So that's really cool that you're involved with Winter Park and that you're changing the face of golf for your son and anybody else who's going to grow up experiencing Winter Park even just once in their life.
Well, again, I live in the community now. It's, you know, the way these work, these little mini municipals, the only way it works is if there is community buy-in and involvement. And, you know, John Ashworth would tell you the same thing about Oceanside. If it wasn't for the community Oceanside, he could not have done it alone. You know, and now he's got guys like Dean Wilson and you know, Kelly Slater stops by, Jeff Ogilvie has played, Mike Weir, you know, and then the Wishbone Brawl and all the Charlie Hoffman and Xander Schauffele being like, you know, "We'll go play in Persimmon Woods," and 800 people. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that's possible. I hope to have some form of a Wishbone Brawl at WP9 one day. Look at all the tour pros that live in the area. Think about what the potential is in terms of raising money for a particular cause. You know, the first year it was for Xander Schauffele's old college coach, and his daughter had, you know, had a kind of a rare disease and had a bunch of medical costs. Boom, that raised money to help offset some of those costs. That's the game of golf.
Yeah, that's
linking souls and all that.
I love when you say that.
I love being a part of it. That's John, and that is nephew Jeff Cunningham, and you know that's the they walk the walk.
Yeah,
well, they lead the way.
And Link Soul is a great brand. Let's just face it. I'm wearing a Link Soul shirt. I think I don't know.
Looks
maybe
like
not. It sure feels. If it's not, it's a knockoff. I've got Link Soul. Re-sure. Okay, moving on. Oh, geez. You
Link Scholl.
Yeah, it's in Alabama. You never heard Link Scholl? So you love Bandon. You love Bandon, not your son. I mean, you do love your son, but you love the place.
I loved Bandon first because I didn't have Bandon, my son.
Yeah.
Until second.
This place is a revelation for you. You talk about it a lot. You go there a lot. I've had the privilege of going there 3 or 4 times, and the people there are great. The The place is great. I went there before I went to Scotland. There's more of a connection than people might realize to, well, Ireland, actually. Can you walk us into that? Because you might know more about Bandon than most people on Earth. So can you just walk us into this a little bit? Well, it's a great story. And I think for anyone who's listening to what I do and they want to know where to go, I would probably just say, look, either go to some crazy place that looks like it's dangerous or go to Bandon Dunes. If you're not up for that, then just go to Bandon Dunes.
Also,
this is unpaid. I don't know. This is just fun.
No, I know. Everyone's like, oh, you get paid by Bandon. No, I don't at all. When I go to Bandon Dunes, yes, they have a media rate that all media enjoys, but I also pay for caddies, pay for food, pay for, you know.
You pay to play at Bandon?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, there's a, you know, that I get a bill at the end of every trip I take to Bandon Dunes. Oh, of course I do. Huh. You know, that's, and I wouldn't really ever want it any other way. You know, I mean, yeah.
You must make more than
golf is at an extremely discounted rate. But, you know, I get, that's, I go there because I want to go there.
Respect. Yeah. Total respect. I was just surprised, I guess, because the truth is, in that sense, we do have a bit of a difference in our lives because I probably wouldn't go to Bandon without working. Like, yeah. I wouldn't go to Bandon without the cameras and without doing a podcast.
Well, I'm from Northern California, and it all goes back to this. So the reason why I have any connection to Bandon Dunes is as, you know, I was a photo editor at Golf World and Golf Digest. And then I was the photo editor at Sports Illustrated, you know, in the late 90s, in 2001, when I made the switch from Sports Illustrated to Golf Digest, that's when Pacific Dunes was opening. And so I wasn't any kind of writer or journalist, you know, as a photo editor or, you know, in the photography department. Yeah, I would send photographers to go take beautiful shots of Bandon. We'd run them in the magazines, but there was no reason why I would, you know, go to Bandon Dunes unless I wanted to. And being from Northern California, we used to play my Uncle Tony, who got me really kind of, you know, rooted into the game of golf through his love and his what he was doing. We'd go every year to a place called Baywood Golf and Country Club. A similar setup as, say, Goat Hill Park, in that it's not necessarily Muni, but it's a little mini golf course. It's kind of look like Northwood in Monterey.
Yeah.
You know,
Alistair McKenzie,
tree line. Yeah, yeah. But had that kind of charm and character. And we'd go there every year since I was 18 years old. I'd bring a team. My uncle would bring a team. Sometimes I'd be on my uncle's team. And that is in Arcata, California. That's sort of Eureka. That's kind of halfway between Santa Rosa, when I was born, and where Bandon Dunes was being developed. Uh-huh. So one year, early 2000s, we extended the trip from Baywood and we went to Bandon.
Uh-huh.
And then one year we went to Bandon and then down to Baywood, you know, and then we, you know, so this was kind of part of, and as the courses developed and then they opened up trails and then Old Mac and then Bandon Preserve, it all just kept rolling along. All of a sudden it was 8 guys and then it was 11 guys. And then some guys would come early, some guys going late. And then I said, all right, that's it. Bandon is going to, let's make this a trip. My Uncle Tony and I, let's pair up and make this trip. And I, you know, going back to sort of remember the golf being built and developed in order to sell real estate, Mike Kaiser bought prime real estate for great golf and had no concerns or cares about houses or anything. That I'm just going to build pure golf. I don't care about a U.S. Open. I don't care about 7,800 yards. I don't care about necessarily accessibility. He had seen that Sand Hills, you know, if you build great golf, people will come. And
Sand Hills is the predecessor, private Nebraska. And ultimately, what I think some people have said,
1995, yeah, Cork Crenshaw.
Some people would say the beginning of modern minimalism or something, right? Something like that.
Part of it, yeah. And made people understand and appreciate, you know, that dialing it back and using the land to really ultimately inspire the design instead of forcing design into the land. Yeah. Going back to that and having a guy and guys like Bill and Ben who, you know, not only appreciate the history and understanding of what was, you know, Bill Core grew up playing, you know, Pinehurst, Donald Ross. So he saw the old form and version. He came from basically the Sand Hills of North Carolina. So you got these two guys who are kind of just, you know, savantish people as it relates to spirituality and land. And, you know, Sand Hills, Mike Kaiser was basically like, oh, okay, let me go find a place where I can put this and let's try to put it on a coastline. Howard McKee, you know, calls him up, says, hey, come check this out. They pay her back to course. So now going back to the story of Bandon. So I fall in love, spirituality. My ashes one day will be spread on behind the 16th green of Bandon Dunes, that 180-degree scape of that coastline and the drama and all that's there and the sunset with that little tree. And you know, that's
and where Ashley Mayo got proposed to.
Proposed to, yeah, yeah.
So, and where many people have had,
I would imagine,
epiphanies.
Yeah, yeah.
All I mean, it's one of the most incredible holes in the world.
I say play Bandon Dunes in the afternoon and time your back nine so that you're catching those holes along the ocean during the sunset. Yeah. You know, because Pacific Dunes, you don't get it. Bandon Trails, you don't get it. Old Mac, you don't get the end of the, all those end of the rounds and inland. But Bandon Dunes sort of ends out there on that coastline. So that's why you play Bandon Dunes in the afternoon. So
I'm actually getting a little choked up. Thinking about the times I've been to Bandon with good friends. Yeah.
So now.
Switch gears.
Yeah, we end up, you know, here I am, pregnant wife. We're trying to figure out the name of my son and my you know, and we're kicking around names. And I look up on the wall and there's a poster of Bandon. I said, what about Bandon? And she goes, I actually kind of like that. Having never seen Bandon Dunes, just simply liking.
And Katie's not a golfer.
Not really. She likes nine and wine with an emphasis on wine. You know what I mean? So,
respect.
Yeah. Oh, who doesn't? Yeah.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, I got to like it. But she's all into sort of what the name means. So she goes and she finds out it means friend of the people, optimistic, determined. She's like, I love it. I'm in. And I was like, what? We get to name our son Bandon. That's so cool. Because knowing what it means to me and my uncle and my favorite memory and the sunsets and spirituality and again that maturation of life in golf.
Because you were going through Bandon as a town in Oregon that didn't necessarily have a golf resort named Bandon Dunes.
No, you know,
correct.
Very few people actually go into the town of Bandon. They just go right to Bandon Dunes. You know, but there is a town of Bandon, and there is this great history, but unbeknownst to me. So go to find out. She also, when she's looking up the name, says, by the way, there's a sister city for Bandon in Oregon, in Ireland. Did you know that? And I was like, I think I may have heard that. I remember seeing a picture of Mike Kaiser next to a sign that said Bandon, and it's obviously some, but it's along the southern coast of Ireland. I'm like, my good, wow, that's cool. And I looked up myself and saw that there's some guy named Lord Bennett who came over and, you know, settled the town of Bandon. I go, wow, it's amazing. Now, last summer, we're in Ireland. Katie and Bandon are with me and we're on a trek and a, you know, adventure. And she goes, by the way, I looked up where Bandon Golf Club is, Bandon, Ireland. It's 2.5 hours away. Do you want to go? We leave Waterville. She goes,
do you want to go?
Yeah.
Just jump in the car for 2.5 hours. Ireland is the scariest place on earth to drive.
Oh, it's
first of all. Every road is a sidewalk.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, and especially this road to Bandon, Ireland. I mean, this is the most extreme case.
And young Bandon, the man, is what, 6 months old or
no,
a year?
At this point, he's about a year and 3 months. So
okay.
He's walking and not talking, but has an affinity for golf in the sense that he wants a club and a ball and he loves to do it.
So he's loving Ireland.
So one of the pros from Hogshead calls ahead and says, by the way, I know the pro out there. I'll set you up and I'll let them know they're coming. Let you're coming. Great. So, you know, there's a private little club in the middle of Bandon, Ireland. We pull up signs. Now we're like getting out, taking pictures. We show up and the president's there, the secretary's there, the head pro's there. They all receive us. Oh, welcome. Welcome to Bandon Golf Club. They have a gift bag for us. All that, there's, you know, gloves, hats, ball mark, anything that says Bandon on. We're like, this is so cool. They take us on a tour of the golf course, which, you know, the castle where Lord Bandon 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 have all lived. It's overlooking the fifth fairway. Now it's sort of, it's like stuff growing inside. No one lives in the castle
anymore. It's a relic. Yeah.
It is still owned by the Bandon family, but it's by one of their daughters, you know, so the names have changed. But what an amazing experience, right, to sort of connect these dots. And then you come to find out that Lord Bennett was never a lord. He just declared himself a boor. Some guy, a lord, he comes over, settles the town of Bandon in the late 1800s. They're mining the waterway there that eventually goes on to be used for all the timber industry that they use. And I'm still piecing all this together, but essentially they didn't treat the Native Americans there that well at all. They
right.
sort of ran them out. It kind of wiped out the tribe of Native Americans.
Well, Ireland was a pretty lawless place that he came from. Like they yeah. were just sort of just all messing with each other back then anyway. So,
and his favorite, I'm not saying he's his right. favorite thing was the gorse bush. He brought Lord Bennett's the guy who brought the gorse bush to the Oregon coastline. And that
this he brought highly gorse seed.
Flammable gorse bush to Oregon. Okay, so he brings back when he goes and gets his family.
So now every golfer hates him.
Well,
in
so
America.
The gorse is going crazy, and the Native American, from what I'm told and I understand, the kind of the spiritual leader of this Native American tribe, because of the way they were treated and how they were treating the land and the rock, not totally unrelated to obviously golf at that time.
Sure. We're
talking late 1800s. Basically said, this town is cursed. Your town will burn down 3 times.
Whoa.
And if you look at the history of the town of Bandon, it has burned down 3 times. And I think it's in 1999, as the development of Bandon Dunes was being done, simultaneously they knew Pacific was going in, so they were also doing the irrigation for Pacific simultaneously as Bandon. And even at that time, they even thought that Old Mac would someday exist. So they were laying a lot of irrigation and stuff. A fourth fire breaks out. And the reason why the fourth fire doesn't burn the town of Bandon down is because the fire breaks and the irrigation that's been caused by the development of Bandon Dunes. So golf essentially saves the town of Bandon and ends the curse that was, you know, the treatment of the original, you know, Native Americans that were there.
And it's like the, hang on a second.
Well, I mean,
that's really crazy because it kind of makes me think that on some level, the golf course was meant to be. I mean, you kind of said that, but I mean, even like the Native Americans were like, somehow, some way, man, you know, this is the golf course will arrive, and that's what we'll prevent.
Yeah, and all of this, you know, again, I'm still trying to kind of piece all this together and get the full story, and I'm working on it from a lot of different angles. But that all starts because I say, let's name our son Bandon, and my wife says, oh, by the way, this is what the name means, and there's a sister city, and we go there, and we connect the dot, and then people start telling stories, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Golf saved the day. So, you know, needless to say, we've never regretted the idea, and little baby B kind of lives up to the name. That place, that word, that name has always been a happy place for me, a place that makes me feel good. He certainly always is my happy place. He's my best friend. He only says 4 words. I still don't know how that's possible, but I'd rather hang out with him than anybody on planet Earth. And
are the 4 words, give me the driver?
It's mama.
Okay. Right.
Ball. Right. We'll say ball.
Oh, good.
He gets very excited when we pass a golf course because he thinks we're getting out to hit some shots. Yeah.
That'll happen for the rest of his life.
He has half of Snowball down. That's a good one.
Ball.
He's halfway to Snowball.
Matt, thank you for your time, man. I really appreciate it. This is really, you know, I can't believe that this has taken so long. Yeah.
Yeah, but in a way, it's probably good. You know, it's good. I
I've learned how to interview better.
No. There is no, you know, we're just doing what we're doing. And you're doing it with your crew, who's your family. I'm doing it with my crew, who's my family. You know, you're still single. Now I'm married. You're taking a very kind of really off the beaten path approach, which, you know, keeps extending all of the conversation beyond, you know, a lot of places I talk about people have heard of, and occasionally I try to uncover something new, but you're always uncovering something new. And you inspire me. I hope one day I inspire somebody else. Like, that's how it all kind of keeps going. And I always tell everybody, we're all in this together. We are all in this world of golf and the special things that golf can give and provide and do. We are in it together.
Yeah.
And I think people say, oh, golf is dead. That's the furthest thing from the truth. Golf is always evolving, just like our connection and our relationship with the game of golf is always evolving. So, you know, If you're not in it with the game of golf, I feel sorry for you. I'm sorry you're not in what we're all in together, because it's a special thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what you said about, like, being a giver and a taker in golf. It's kind of true, like, in our job, too. Like, as a journalist, oh, man, I feel like we'd go for another hour real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Just another quick hour.
Yeah.
Talk about the Masters Media Center and how they celebrate journalists. Thank you for being a journalist. Thank you for being a role model in my life and a person that I learned a lot from in the short time that we've known each other. I'm looking forward to more.
I can't wait. See you next week.
Next week for part two. All right, have a good week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.